Iran is so situated that, if one is to believe the Iranian tradition, the sun was absent for a threefold day, and then it shone for a threefold day. Further to the east there must have been a protracted day corresponding to the protracted night in the west. According to Bahman Yazd, at the end of a world age in eastern Iran or in India the sun remained 10 days visible in the sky. In China, during the reign of the Emperor Yu, a great catastrophe brought a world age to a close. For 10 days the sun did not set. 15 The events of the time of the Emperor Yu deserve close examination. I shall return to the subject shortly. Earthquake. The earth, forced out of its regular motion, reacted to the close approach of the body of the comet. A major shock convulsed the lithosphere, and the area of the earthquake was the entire globe. If you were witnessed and survived this earthquake, the towns are destroyed. Upper Egypt has become waste. All is ruin. The residence is overturned in a minute. Only an earthquake could have overturned the residence in a minute. The Egyptian word for to overturn is used in the sense of to overthrow a wall. This was the 10th plague. And Pharaoh rose up in the night, he, and all his servants, and all the Egyptians, and there was a great cry in Egypt, for there was not a house where there was not one dead. Exodus 12:30. Houses fell, smitten by one violent blow. The angel of the Lord passed over the houses of the children of Israel in Egypt, when he smote the Egyptians, and delivered our houses. Exodus 12:27. Nogaf, meaning smote, is the word used for a very violent blow, as, for instance, goring by the horns of an ox. The Passover Haggadah says, the firstborn of the Egyptians didst thou crush at midnight. The reason why the Israelites were more fortunate in this plague than the Egyptians probably lies in the kind of material of which their dwellings were constructed. Occupying a marshy district and working on clay, the captives must have lived in huts made of clay and reeds, which are more resilient than brick or stone. The Lord will pass over the door, and will not suffer the destroyer to come and smite your houses. An example of the selective action of a natural agent upon various kinds of construction is narrated also in Mexican annals. During a catastrophe accompanied by hurricane and earthquake, only the people who lived in small log cabins remained uninjured. The larger buildings were swept away. They found that those who lived in small houses had escaped, as well as the newly married couples, whose custom it was to live for a few years in cabins in front of those of their fathers-in-law. In Ages in Chaos, My Reconstruction of Ancient History, I shall show that firstborn in the text of the plague is a corruption of chosen. There was hail and earthquake by night, so that those who fled from the earthquake were killed by the hail, and those who sought shelter from the hail were destroyed by the earthquake. And at that time all the houses fell in, and most of the temples. Also, Hieronymus, Saint Jerome, wrote in an epistle that in the night in which Exodus took place, all the temples of Egypt were destroyed either by an earth shock or by the thunderbolt. Similarly in the Midrashim, the 7th plague, the plague of Barad, meteorites, earthquake, fire, meteorites. It is also said that the structures which were erected by the Israelite slaves in Pithom and Ramses collapsed or were swallowed by the earth. An inscription which dates from the beginning of the New Kingdom refers to a temple of the Middle Kingdom that was swallowed by the ground at the close of the Middle Kingdom. The head of the celestial body approached very close, breaking through the darkness of the gaseous envelope, and according to the Midrashim, the last night in Egypt was as bright as the noon on the day of the summer solstice. The population fled, men flee, tents are what they make like the dwellers of hills, wrote Ipua. The population of a city destroyed by an earthquake usually spends the nights in the fields. The book of Exodus describes a hurried flight from Egypt on the night of the 10th plague. A mixed multitude of non-Israelites left Egypt together with the Israelites, who spent their first night in Succoth, huts. The lightnings lightened the world, the earth trembled and shook. Thou leddest thy people like a flock by the hand of Moses and Aaron. 14 They were brought out of Egypt by a portent which looked like a stretched arm, by a stretched out arm and by great terrors, or with a mighty hand, and with an outstretched arm, and with great terribleness, and with signs, and with wonders. At midnight all the houses of Egypt were smitten, there was not a house where there was not one dead. This happened on the night of the 14th of the month of Eve, Exodus 12-6, 13-4. This is the night of Passover. It appears that the Israelites originally celebrated Passover on the eve of the 14th of Aviv. The month of Eve is called the first month, Exodus 12:18. Thout was the name of the first month of the Egyptians. What, for the Israelites, became a feast, became a day of sadness and fasting for the Egyptians. The 13th day of the month Thout is a very bad day. Thou shalt not do anything on this day. It is the day of the combat which Horus waged with Seth. The Hebrews counted, and still count, the beginning of the day from sunset, to the Egyptians reckoned from sunrise. As the catastrophe took place at midnight, for the Israelites it was the 14th day of the first month, for the Egyptians it was the 13th day. An earthquake caused by contact or collision with a comet must be felt simultaneously all around the world. An earthquake is a phenomenon that occurs from time to time, but an earthquake accompanying an impact in the cosmos would stand out and be recalled as a memorable date by survivors. In the calendar of the Western Hemisphere, on the 13th day of the month, called Olin, motion or earthquake, a new sun is said to have initiated another world age. The Aztecs, like the Egyptians, reckoned the day from sunrise. Here we have, en passant, the answer to the open question concerning the origin of the superstition which regards the number 13, and especially the 13th day, as unlucky and inauspicious. It is still the belief of many superstitious persons, unchanged through thousands of years and even expressed in the same terms, the 13th day is a very bad day. You shall not do anything on this day. I do not think that any record of this belief can be found dating from before the time of the Exodus. The Israelites did not share this superstition of the evil working number 13, or 14. Chapter 3, The Hurricane. The swift shifting of the atmosphere under the impact of the gaseous parts of the comet, the drift of air attracted by the body of the comet, and the rush of the atmosphere resulting from inertia when the Earth stopped rotating or shifted its poles, all contributed to produce hurricanes of enormous velocity and force and of worldwide dimensions. Manuscript Trueno and other documents of the Mayas describe a cosmic catastrophe during which the ocean fell on the continent, and a terrible hurricane swept the earth from the sky and participated with fire and water in the destruction of the world. For 5 days, save for the burning naphtha and burning volcanoes, the world was dark, since the sun did not appear. The theme of a cosmic hurricane is reiterated time and again in the Hindu Vedas and in the Persian Avesta and Diluvium Venti. The deluge of wind is a term known from many ancient authors. 5 In the section, The Darkness, I quoted rabbinical sources on the exceedingly strong west wind that endured for 7 days when the land was enveloped in darkness, and the hieroglyphic inscription from El Arish about 9 days of upheaval when there was such a tempest that nobody could leave the palace or see the faces of those beside him, and the 11th tablet of the Epic of Gilgamesh which says that 6 days and a night, the hurricane, deluge, and tempest continued sweeping the land, and mankind perished almost altogether. In the battle of the planet god Marduk with Tiamat, he, Marduk, created the evil wind, and the tempest, and the hurricane, and the fourfold wind, and the sevenfold wind, and the whirlwind, and the wind which had no equal. The Maoris narrate that amid a stupendous catastrophe the mighty winds, the fierce squalls, the clouds, dense, dark, fiery, wildly drifting, wildly bursting, rushed on creation, in their midst to Irimati, father of winds and storms, and swept away giant forests and lashed the waters into billows whose crests rose high like mountains. The earth groaned terribly, and the ocean fled. The earth was submerged in the ocean but was drawn by Tefa'afanau, relate the aborigines of Paumotu in Polynesia. The new isles abated by a star. In the month of March the Polynesians celebrate a god, Tafnua. In Arabic, typhoon is a whirlwind and tufan is the deluge, and the same word occurs in Chinese as tifong. It appears as though the noise of the hurricane was overtoned by a sound not unlike the name typhon, as if the storm were calling him by name. The cosmic upheaval proceeded with a mighty strong west wind, but before the climax, in the simple words of the scriptures, the Lord caused the sea to go back by a strong east wind all that night, and made the sea dry land, and the waters were divided. The Israelites were on the shore of the Sea of Passage at the climax of the cataclysm. The name Jamsuf is generally rendered as Red Sea. The passage is supposed to have taken place either at the Gulf of Suez or at Aqaba, the Gulf of the Red Sea, but sometimes the site of the passage is identified as one of the inner lakes on the route from Suez to the Mediterranean. It is argued that Suf means reed, papyrus reed, and since papyrus reed does not grow in salt water, Jamsuf must have been a lagoon of fresh water. We will not enter here into a discussion where the Sea of the Passage was. The inscription on the shrine found in El Arish may provide some indication where the pharaoh was engulfed by the whirlpool ; 13. In any event, the topographical distribution of sea and land did not remain the same as before the cataclysm of the days of the Exodus. But the name of the Sea of the Passage, Jamsuf, is derived not from reed, but from hurricane, suf, safe, in Hebrew. In Egyptian the Red Sea is called Shari, which signifies the Sea of Percussion, Mer Percussionis, or the Sea of the Stroke or of the Disaster. The Haggadah of Passover says, "Thou didst sweep the land of Moph and Noph, on the Passover." The hurricane that brought to an end the Middle Kingdom in Egypt, the blast of heavenly displeasure in the language of Manetho, swept through every corner of the world. In order to distinguish, in the traditions of the peoples, this diluvium venti of cosmic dimensions from local disastrous storms, other cosmic disturbances like disappearance of the sun or change of the sky must be found accompanying the hurricane. In the Japanese cosmogonical myth, the sun goddess hid herself for a long time in a heavenly cave in fear of the storm god. The source of light disappeared, the whole world became dark, and the storm god caused monstrous destruction. Gods made terrible noise so that the sun should reappear, and from their tumult the earthquake. 16. In Japan and in the vast extent of the ocean, hurricanes and earthquakes are not rare occurrences, but they do not disturb the day-night succession, nor is there any resulting permanent change in the sky and its luminaries. The sky was low, relate the Polynesians of Takofo Island, and then the winds and waterspouts and the hurricanes came, and carried up the sky to its present height. When a world cycle is destroyed by wind, says the Buddhist text on the world cycles, the wind also turns the ground upside down, and throws it into the sky, and areas of 100 leagues in extent, 200, 300, 500 leagues in extent, crack and are thrown upward by the force of the wind and do not fall again but are blown to powder in the sky and annihilated. And the wind throws up also into the sky the mountains which encircle the earth, they are ground to powder and destroyed. The cosmic wind blows and destroys 100,000 × 10,000,000 worlds. The tide. The ocean tides are produced by the action of the sun and to a larger extent by that of the moon. A body larger than the moon or one nearer to the earth would act with greater effect. A comet with a head as large as the earth, passing sufficiently close, would raise the waters of the oceans miles high. The slowing down or stasis of the earth in its rotation would cause a tidal recession of water toward the poles, but the celestial body nearby would disturb this poleward recession, drawing the water toward itself. The traditions of many peoples persist that seas were torn apart and their water heaped high and thrown upon the continents. In order to establish that these traditions refer to one and the same event, or at least to an event of the same order, we must keep to this guiding sequence. The great tide followed a disturbance in the motion of the earth. The Chinese annals, which I have mentioned and which I intend to quote more extensively in a subsequent section, say that in the time of Emperor Ye the sun did not go down for 10 daves. The world was in flames, and in their vast extent the waters overtopped the great heights, threatening the heavens with their floods. The water of the ocean was heaped up and cast upon the continent of Asia. A great tidal wave swept over the mountains and broke in the middle of the Chinese Empire. The water was caught in the valleys between the mountains, and the land was flooded for decades. The traditions of the people of Peru tell that for a period of time equal to 5 days and 5 nights the sun was not in the sky, and then the ocean left the shore and with a terrible din broke over the continent. The entire surface of the earth was changed in this catastrophe. The Choctaw Indians of Oklahoma relate, the earth was plunged in darkness for a long time. Finally a bright light appeared in the north, but it was mountain-high waves, rapidly coming nearer. In these traditions there are two concurrent elements, a complete darkness that endured a number of days, in Asia, prolonged day and, when the light broke through, a mountain-high wave that brought destruction. The Hebrew story of the passage of the sea contains the same elements. There was a prolonged and complete darkness, Exodus 10:21. The last day of the darkness was at the Red Sea. When the world plunged out of darkness, the bottom of the sea was uncovered. The waters were driven apart and heaped up like walls in a double tide. 6. The Septuagint translation of the Bible says that the water stood as a wall, and the Quran, referring to this event, says like mountains. In the old rabbinical literature it is said that the water was suspended as if it were glass, solid and massive. The commentator Rashi, guided by the grammatical structure of the sentence in the book of Exodus, explained in accordance with Metzalta, the water of all oceans and seas was divided. The Midrashim contained the following description: the waters were piled up to the height of 1600 miles, and they could be seen by all the nations of the earth. The figure in this sentence intends to say that the heap of water was tremendous. According to the scriptures, the waters climbed the mountains and stood above them, and they mounted to the heavens. A sea rent apart was a marvelous spectacle and could not have been forgotten. It is mentioned in numerous passages in the scriptures. The pillars of heaven tremble. He divideth the sea with his power. You marvelous things did he in the sight of their fathers. He divided the sea, and caused them to pass through, and he made the waters to stand as a heap. 12. He gathereth the waters of the sea together as a heap. Let all the inhabitants of the world stand in awe of him. Then the great sea, the Mediterranean, broke into the Red Sea in an enormous tidal wave. It was an unusual event, and because it was unusual, it became the most impressive recollection in the very long history of this people. All peoples and nations were blasted by the same fire and shattered in the same fury. The tribes of Israel on the shore of a sea found in this annihilation their salvation from bondage. They escaped destruction but their oppressors perished before their eyes. They extolled the Creator, took upon themselves the burden of moral rules, and considered themselves chosen for a great destiny. When the Spaniards conquered Yucatan, Indians versed in their ancient literature related to the conquerors the tradition handed down to them by their ancestors. Their forefathers were delivered from pursuit by some other people when the Lord opened for them a way in the midst of the sea. This tradition is so similar to the Jewish tradition of the passage that some of the friars who came to America believed that the Indians of America were of Jewish origin. Friar Diego de Landa wrote, "Some old men of Yucatan say that they have heard from their ancestors that this country was peopled by a certain race who came from the east, whom God delivered by opening for them 12 roads through the sea. If this is true, all the inhabitants of the Indies must be of Jewish descent. It may have been an echo of what happened at the Sea of Passage, or a description of a similar occurrence at the same time but in another place." According to the Lapland cosmogonic story, when the wickedness increased among the human beings, the midmost of the earth trembled with terror so that the upper layers of the earth fell away and many of the people were hurled down into those caved-in places to perish. And Jubmal, the heaven lord himself, came down. His terrible anger flashed like red, blue, and green fire serpents, and people hid their faces, and the children screamed with fear. The angry God spoke, "I shall reverse the world. I shall bid the rivers flow upward, I shall cause the sea to gather together itself up into a huge towering wall which I shall hurl upon your wicked earth children, and thus destroy them and all life." Jubmal set a storm wind blowing, and the wild air spirits raging. Foaming, dashing, rising sky high came the sea wall, crushing all things. Jubmal, with one strong upheaval, made the earth lands all turn over, then, the world again he righted. Now the mountains and the highlands could no more be seen by Bijk, sun. Filled with groans of dying people, was the fair earth, home of mankind. No more Bhikshan in heaven. According to the Lapland epic, the world was overwhelmed by the hurricane and the sea, and almost all human beings perished. After the sea wall fell on the continent, gigantic waves continued to roll and dead bodies were dashed about in dark waters. The great earthquake and the chasms that opened in the ground, the appearance of a celestial body with serpent-like flashes, rivers flowing upward, a sea wall that crushed everything, mountains that became leveled or covered with water, the world that was turned over and then righted, the sun that no more shone in the sky, all these are motifs which we found in the description of the calamities of the time of the Exodus. In many places of the world, and especially in the north, large boulders are found in a position which proves that a great force must have lifted them up and carried them long distances before depositing them where they are found today. Sometimes these large loose rocks are of entirely different mineral composition than the local rocks, but are akin to formations many miles away. Thus, occasionally an erratic boulder of granite perches on top of a high ridge of dolerite, whereas the nearest outcrops of granite lie far away. These erratic boulders may weigh as much as 10,000 tons, about as much as 130,000 people. To explain these facts, the scholars of the first half of the 19th century assumed that enormous tides had swept over the continents and carried with them masses of stone. The transfer of the rocks was explained by the tides, but what could have caused those billows to rise high over the continents? It was conceived that somehow and somewhere in the far north a series of gigantic waves was mysteriously propagated. These waves were supposed to have precipitated themselves upon the land, and then swept madly on over mountain and valley alike, carrying along with them a mighty burden of rocks and stones and rubbish. Such deluges were styled waves of translation, and the dill was believed to represent the materials which they hurried along with them in their wild course across the country. The stones and boulders on the hilltops and the mounds of sand and gravel in the lowlands were explained by this theory. Critics, however, maintained that it was unfortunate for this view that it violated at the very outset the first principles of science, by assuming the former existence of a cause which there was little in nature to warrant. Spasmodic crushes of the sea across a whole country had fortunately never been experienced within the memory of man. That the correctness of the last sentence is questionable is shown by references to the traditions of a number of peoples. Wherever possible, the movement of stones was attributed to the progress of the ice sheet in the glacial ages and to glaciers on the mountain slopes. In 1840, assumed that just as the alpine moraines were left behind by the retreating glaciers, so the moraines in the flatlands of northern Europe and America could have been caused by the movement of great continental ice sheets, and thus introduced the theory of ice ages. Although this is correct to some extent, the analogy is not exact, as the glaciers of the Alps push the stones down, not up the slope. Meeting an upward motion of the ice, large boulders would probably sink into the ice. The problem of the migration of the stones must be regarded as only partially connected with the progress and retreat of the ice sheet, if at all. Billows miles high traveled over the land, originating in causes described in this book. It can be established by the extent of denudation of the rocks under the erratic boulders that the latter were deposited at their places during human history. So, for instance, in Wales and Yorkshire, where this effect was evaluated in terms of time, the amount of denudation of limestone rocks on which boulders lie is a proof that a period of no more than 6,000 years has elapsed since the boulders were left in their positions. The fact that accumulations of stones were transferred from the equator toward the higher latitudes, an enigmatic problem in the ice theory, can be explained by the poleward recession of the equatorial waters at the moment the velocity of rotation of the Earth was reduced or its poles were shifted. In the northern hemisphere, in India, the moraines were carried from the equator not only toward higher latitudes, but also toward the Himalaya mountains, and in the southern hemisphere from the equatorial regions of Africa toward the higher latitudes, across the prairies and deserts and forests of the Black Continent. The battle in the sky at the same time that the seas were heaped up in immense tides, a pageant went on in the sky which presented itself to the horrified onlookers on Earth as a gigantic battle. Because this battle was seen from almost all parts of the world, and because it impressed itself very strongly upon the imagination of the peoples, it can be reconstructed in some detail. When the Earth passed through the gases, dust, and meteorites of the tail of the comet, disturbed in rotation, it proceeded on a distorted orbit. Emerging from the darkness, the eastern hemisphere faced the head of the comet. This head only shortly before had passed close to the sun and was in a state of candescence. The night the great earthquake shook the globe was, according to rabbinical literature, as bright as the day of the summer solstice. Because of the proximity of the Earth, the comet left its own orbit and for a while followed the orbit of the Earth. The great ball of the comet retreated, then again approached the Earth, shrouded in a dark column of gases which looked like a pillar of smoke during the day and of fire at night, and the Earth once more passed through the atmosphere of the comet, this time at its neck. This stage was accompanied by violent and incessant electrical discharges between the atmosphere of the tail and the terrestrial atmosphere. There was an interval of about 6 days between these two close approaches. Emerging from the gases of the comet, the Earth seems to have changed the direction of its rotation, and the pillar of smoke moved to the opposite horizon. The column looked like a gigantic moving serpent. When the tidal waves rose to their highest point, and the seas were torn apart, a tremendous spark flew between the Earth and the globe of the comet, which instantly pushed down the miles-high billows. Meanwhile, the tail of the comet and its head, having become entangled with each other by their close contact with the Earth, exchanged violent discharges of electricity. It looked like a battle between the brilliant globe and the dark column of smoke. In the exchange of electrical potentials, the tail and the head were attracted one to the other and repelled one from the other. From the serpent-like tail extensions grew, and it lost the form of a column. It looked now like a furious animal with legs and with many heads. The discharges tore the column to pieces, a process that was accompanied by a rain of meteorites upon the Earth. It appeared as though the monster were defeated by the brilliant globe and buried in the sea, or wherever the meteorites fell. The gases of the tail subsequently enveloped the Earth. The globe of the comet, which lost a large portion of its atmosphere as well as much of its electrical potential, withdrew from the Earth but did not break away from its attraction. Apparently, after a 6-week interval, the distance between the Earth and the globe of the comet again diminished. This new approach of the globe could not be readily observed because the Earth was shrouded in the clouds of dust left by the comet on its former approach as well as by dust ejected by the volcanoes. After renewed discharges, the comet and the Earth parted. This behavior of the comet is of great importance in problems of celestial mechanics. That a comet, encountering a planet, can become entangled and drawn away from its own path, forced into a new course, and finally liberated from the influence of the planet is proved by the case of Lexell's comet, which in 1767 was captured by Jupiter and its moons. Not until 1779 did it free itself from this entanglement. A phenomenon that has not been observed in modern times is an electrical discharge between a planet and a comet and also between the head of a comet and its trailing part. The events in the sky were viewed by the peoples of the world as a fight between an evil monster in the form of a serpent and the light god who engaged the monster in battle and thus saved the world. The tail of the comet, leaping back and forth under the discharges of the flaming globe, was regarded as a separate body, inimical to the globe of the comet. A full survey of the religious and folklore motifs which mirror this event would require more space than is at my disposal here. It is difficult to find a people or tribe on the Earth that does not have the same motif at the very focus of its religious beliefs. Since the descriptions of the battle between Marduk and Tiamat, the dragon, or Isis and Seth, or Vishnu and the serpent, or Krishna, I intend to handle a portion of this material in an essay on the dragon and serpent, or Ormuzd and Ahriman follow an almost identical pattern and have many details in common with the battle of Zeus and Typhon. I shall give here a Polydorus description of this battle. Typhon outtopped all the mountains, and his head often brushed the stars. One of his hands reached out to the west and the other to the east, and from them projected 100 dragons' heads. From the thighs downward he had huge coils of vipers which emitted a long hissing. His body was all winged. and fire flashed from his eyes. Such and so great was Typhon when, hurling kindled rocks, he made for the very heaven with hissing and shouts, spouting a great jet of fire from his mouth. To the sky of Egypt Zeus pursued Typhon, rushing at heaven.